The Guardian.
Euro 2012 Football Daily with James Richardson from The Guardian.
Oh, bleeding lay. Spain, all this time, they were hustling us. The pod salutes Del Bosque's imperious sides fresh from their 4-0 destruction of Italian. Spares a thought for Cesare Prandelli's beaten side and generally packs up and clears out our Euro 2012 quarters. All together then, one last time in Football Daily. Damn straight, listener. Damn straight. Right.
Let's have this.
Hey, I can't believe that the 3 weeks is over. I also can't believe what we just saw in Kiev. But anyway, here we go then on this one last job. It's Paul McKinney's.
Hello there.
Hi, Paul. Scott Murray.
Hi, James.
And because you demanded it, Amy Lawrence.
Hello.
Hi. Hi, everybody. You know what? I think I preferred Spain when they were boring. They have to do that, Amy. There were only 10 of those Italians out there.
I know. It was hard not to feel a bit of sympathy at the end towards the Italians. But it looked like Spain, one would hesitate to think that really their players care too much for what the critics ever think. However, it did look as if they wanted to produce something that effectively made people fall in love with Spanish football again. And when you watch that kind of calibre of performance, it was, you know, something like that means there is no debate about a false nine. There are no need for tactical, you know, analyses about which way they should be playing, because they just played superb football. And to win a final in that manner must be an incredible feeling for those players, and so deserved. And also for Vicente Del Bosque, just an astonishing achievement to become the first manager to have that fantastic hat-trick. And when you think about Del Bosque, in the 5 years prior to being Spain manager, he was actually only in work for one season, and that wasn't a great season either at Besiktas. So incredible to think that in between his very successful period with Real Madrid, where famously he was booted out a day after winning the La Liga title, having also won a couple of Champions Leagues, he then had a hiatus where he was largely out of work, and has obviously come back to do something that has never been done before, and does it in such an understated and humble way. It's quite something.
Amazing. Note to FA, get Alan Kerbushi in now. Scott Murray.
Yes.
We got Sid waiting on the line in a second or two. Your thoughts? You saw that 1-1 back at the start of the championship,
yeah.
And you saw tonight.
Uh-huh.
What happened? Did Spain happen? Was it that simple?
Yeah, I mean that was the thing. Spain just came out and they played. They went for Italy, and I realised that it was helped by the fact that Italy were going for them a bit as well. But Spain were just magnificent. I think it's a wee bit of a shame. I mean, obviously it was a shame for Italy that they went down to 10 men. I think it's a shame for Spain as well, because they were on their way to a 3 or 4-0 win anyway, I think, whether it was 11-a-side or not. They were just magnificent. There was on Saturday night, I was in to do the Andy Murray tennis game, and he was a breakdown in the third set too, and it looked as though he was going out of Wimbledon, and he was just incredibly passive, and then he suddenly just went for it and everything started flying in. He was magnificent. So you thought, hold on, this guy could possibly win Wimbledon, you never know. And it just seemed, I thought that was quite similar to the difference between Spain's first game, the 1-1 draw against Italy, when they sort of sat back and didn't really go for it. And tonight they just came out in this signature performance that I think has been missing from their entire imperial phase since 2008. They've finally delivered it. And I think that it really does change the picture of everything they've done for the last few years.
Research indicates, Paul, and just to mention Morgan Adams saying, has anyone called it ticky taxidermy yet? Opposition getting stuffed, etc. Nice work there. But research indicates that the last time Italy lost this badly, by 4 goals, 1948. Of course, there was the 4-1 against Brazil in 1970, a Brazil side that is regularly talked of as the best team ever. This, surely, is a game that's going to be talked of for generations to come.
It's funny. It was a really great game, and I really enjoyed it. And it was great to see so many of the Spain squad deliver their best performances of the tournament on the pitch in the final. I wasn't entirely sure that it is something that will go down.
No?
I thought the first half was more even than all that. Particularly, at 1-0 down, the Italians had the best of the game. But there were differences. Spain had the edge, and then they had a moment of virtuosity where Alba just outstrips. He's like a kind of a very fast car, like a Lamborghini or something, maybe a Ferrari going on the outside, like or coming into the middle. Seat's fast though.
Well, presumably, let's just say
we got a fast car there. Yeah. But anyway, that changed the game, and I think after that it wasn't really much of a contest. I thought the Italians really didn't think they could get back in the game.
1970 wasn't much of a contest either.
I wasn't around.
But also, if you're going to be analysing performances like that, I mean, I think in some ways, if you look at all four goals, the fact that in each case the assist was really fantastic, and in some ways almost more memorable than the finish, or very much such a key part of the goal, and that in some ways sums up what this Spanish team are all about. And I think it's just an interesting kind of take, and it paints a picture of how they play, and it was fitting really that the goals
came. They need the space to do that though, don't they?
Let's go to Sid, who's in the bowels of the National Stadium in Kiev, waiting to talk to us.
Euro 2012 Football Daily with AC Jimbo.
That was quite special then, eh?
Yeah, wasn't it? Just brilliant. Very, very, very impressive indeed. And I think, it's difficult because I don't really know exactly, looking back on the tournament, how to analyse it. And I, as you know, I don't entirely share some of the criticisms that were made of Spain, but I sort of felt like they needed that tonight. It's bizarre. They were going for a unique treble, and yet it never felt like it was quite enough. Or certainly amongst some people, and obviously, of course, for Spaniards, it was more than enough, but it wasn't quite enough. And I think they needed tonight not just to win, but to kind of sort of say, okay, is that good enough for you? And of course it was.
But tonight they truly had stepped things up a gear. They were on another level, though, tonight, even compared to their other games this tournament.
Yeah, I think they were. I saw an interesting statistic, and far be it for me to always defend with statistics, but of course it reveals something you don't necessarily know, or you don't see, or you don't perhaps appreciate, which was that in the first half, by half time, Italy had more than 50% of possession, which hasn't happened to Spain in a full game. Now, obviously, by the end, it hadn't happened tonight either. That hasn't happened to Spain in a full game since 2008. In other words, 4 years ago. I think that to some extent, having slightly less of the possession and having a team that came towards them a bit enabled Spain to find the spaces that they've been denied all the way through this tournament. And we go back to that kind of long debate we had a few weeks ago, which is that one of the reasons why Spain's games haven't been so exciting, of course, has been the manner in which other teams have set up. And Italy certainly played their part tonight, bizarrely. I know it sounds like a kick in the teeth for the Italians, and I don't mean it to. But they played their part in that they opened up and they went for Spain, and I think that enabled Spain to find perhaps a bit more space. But I also thought just the speed of the Spanish tonight was better than it's been throughout the tournament. I don't so much mean that the physical speed, although Alba on the goal seemed to me to be getting faster and faster and faster. It was almost like he was going to take off eventually. But the speed with which they moved the ball, I thought their passing was much, much crisper, much clearer in what they were trying to do. I thought they played perhaps with a bit more intent tonight than maybe in some of their other games.
Sid, you've seen them all the way through, of course, and in previous tournaments, etc. Is this their best performance yet?
I think it's impossible to say no when you bear in mind that it's a European Championship final, for goodness.
And they beat Italy 4-0. That never happens.
Yeah. I mean, sorry?
No, I'm just saying that. Yeah, they beat Italy 4-0. That just doesn't happen.
I mean, this is a thing. It's a European Championship final. It's Italy. And they scored four. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I think it's very, very difficult to think of a performance that was better than this. I don't think there has been one. Of course, every game's got a million reasons why it comes out the way it does, but yeah, you can't go beyond this, and it's a really brilliant way to complete an entirely unique cycle.
We hear a lot about Prandelli all the way through this tournament, the effect he's had on Italian football and that. Del Bosque has just become the only coach to win the World Cup, European Cup, European Championship. How about a word or two about him?
Del Bosque gets attacked with compliments.
Oh.
So people say, oh, Del Bosque, he's a lovely man.
Damning with faint praise.
It's almost as if they don't want to accept, and a good manager. By saying he's a lovely man, it's almost as if he wants that to be the only thing he's got going for him. He's nice, he's quiet, he's got what the Spanish refer to as a lot of left hand. Nabadji's very good at kind of keeping people happy. But there's always an assumption that he doesn't do anything tactically. And there have been some criticism of him at this tournament because there's a sense that maybe he doesn't need both of his central midfielders. And by the way, I think that's something that's certainly a valid debate, even if you don't necessarily agree with him. But what he's achieved is astonishing. This is a guy who won two Champions Leagues with Real Madrid, two league titles with Real Madrid. Now, of course, the argument from John Toshack would be, in fact has been, Del Bosque always inherits a great team, which is sort of true, but Del Bosque has evolved this side a little bit. He has changed one or two things. He is more cautious than Luis Aragonés, for example. And I think in that sense, I think he deserves an absolutely enormous amount of credit. And he's been beaten up, metaphorically speaking, beaten up time and time again for many of the things he does, and he always takes it in his stride. He never really bites back, and even when he does bite back, it's done impeccably politely. And I think that there have been some footballing decisions he's made that people wouldn't necessarily have shared, and he has a habit of getting them right.
Sid Lowe in Spain. He's gone off to hunt down top pal Filippo Maria Ricci to give us the in no way historical or dramatic Italian perspective on that 4-0 shellacking. Scott, some people are complaining that you said you wanted Spain to be stopped for the good of football.
Well, yes. I kind of did. I mean, the point was that if they were going to go and play like they have done for most of the tournament, then it would have been a good thing if they lost. As it happens, they didn't. I mean, it's one of the things that history is written by the victors, and you know their approach tonight has changed everything, I think.
Well, it certainly has. Connor Considine's got some good news for us. He says, AC Jimbo, there it is. Lineker just said it. The rain in Spain line. At least we got one prediction right in Euro 2012.
Tiki taxi for Lineker.
hey. Ah. This just in, Filippo Maria Ricci on the line from bowels of National Stadium in Kiev. Buonasera, Filippo. Buonasera.
Buonasera.
Yeah.
Are you sure that I have to talk?
Yeah. It's good to talk. It's good to get it out, Filippo.
Yeah, okay. Get it out.
All right, then.
So it's a therapy pod or pod therapy.
That's very much what we're using it for. Pod therapy.
Okay.
Listen, Filippo.
So, doctor, please ask.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to ask. It was 1-1 when you played them last time. Tonight, what happened?
Spain was different. Was another team much more determined, and we've lost the surprise effect.
All right.
In the first game, there were surprise. I think we did well with a defense of three because we had two men, Pirlo and De Rossi, trying to bring up the ball. Tonight, we hadn't. Those two. De Rossi was in his usual position, and we knew that in this position, De Rossi loses something. So Pirlo was alone. And secondly, Spain played, I think, the perfect game. And without having two players to defend, bringing up the ball, Fabregas was more free, and he was a disaster for us. He caused havoc. He was, I think, was the most influential player. The MVP was given to Iniesta, but I think that was a very wrong decision. Best player on the pitch was surely Fabregas for me, or Silva, or Xavi. What I said, perhaps I think told him to you the other night, and we have one Pirlo, they have four. And this was the difference. And when they play like this, they are unstoppable. And again, you know, once they score, we all know that it's very difficult to score a goal against Spain. Now they've gone 990 minutes without conceding a goal in a knockout phase game. So it's 10 games. So I think this has played a part psychologically with our players, because once they get the first goal, they said, and now how can we get our goal? Finally, the changes decided by Prandelli, I didn't understand, especially the third one. You have wasted one change because Chiellini was injured. Then, okay, Cassano, all the Italian press was slashing Cassano. He didn't have a good game, so, okay, I can understand. But then, obviously, you have Diamanti and Giovinco, so two attacking players. And Montolivo wasn't doing that bad. Changing Montolivo for Motta, it's like sending really the wrong message. And what? Do you want to defend a 2-0? You ended up with this kind of team, you ended up like this.
Oh, well.
So this is my analysis, doctor. I don't know, what can I do to get better?
I don't think there is a cure, Filippo. I think it's part of the crazy malattia that is being a tifoso. Yeah, yeah. But there you go. Let's not let this sour note spoil anyway our appreciation of the extraordinary tournament that Italy have had, and you as well, in your own small way, have had as well, Filippo.
Yeah, now, we had a wonderful Euro, to be honest. Okay, this final is a set final. Okay, we lost 4-0, but we had a wonderful championship. When we started, no one was thinking that Italy could reach the final, and everyone was thinking that Spain could reach the final and possibly win. So, you know, for Italy, this has been a very good tournament. If you consider the scandal, the injuries, and all the problems we have had, I think, you know, we had a great tournament. Then, you know, we're playing against what I call a generation of phenomenons. Mm. In Italian, it's more popular, this phrase. Una generazione di fenomeni. They've won, you know, this is, until today, there was only one player in the football history that have won 2 Euros. That was Rainer Bonhof, the German. And he didn't play a single minute in his first one, in the 72 edition. Now, there are 12 Spanish players that have done the same. So this is, we're talking about a generation. We're not talking about one player, Messi, Ronaldo. No. Yeah. We're talking about an entire generation. This is massive. How can you stop them? You know, they've won the 3 tournaments in a row. No one has ever done it.
Filippo Maria Ricci. Well, a couple of questions spring to mind as we wrap things up here at Euro 2012 Football Daily headquarters. One, average age of the Spanish side, and we're saying about we'll be seeing the same problem in 4 years, same issue in 4 years' time with Spain, can anyone stop them? But they're what, 27, 28? So, I mean, they've done 3 in a row now. They've got to be the favourites stage for the World Cup in 2014. I'm just losing all sense of perspective at this point.
Yeah, they would be amongst the favourites. And when you consider how unusual it is for any European team to win a World Cup in South America, that would be a very
massive,
interesting, massive achievement.
Yeah, and it's Iniesta, only 28. I mean, that is just shocking. The guy plays with the head of a 40-year-old.
Yeah, literally, in his case. Yes. The haircut of a 40-year-old, anyway.
And also,
I dream of having a haircut like that. Sorry, Scott.
No, I'm just going to say, also, this time with this World Cup coming up, we can automatically knock Brazil out of the equation, because it's just no way. It's going to be 1950 all over again.
Why?
The pressure will be way too big for them.
Oh, I see, right. Okay, interesting. Hey, here's another thing. We talk about the big tactical innovation of tournaments, and clearly, you know, the false nine or the lack of a striker, the 4-6-0 or whatever. Are we going to see loads of teams? Are we going to see... I'm not going to say Stoke. I wanted to say Stoke, but are we going to see lots of teams suddenly going all trendy with a no-striker formation?
Craig Levein will be in great demand.
Yeah. It didn't start with him, though.
No, well, I mean, you could say that the United
Spalletti's
team...
Spalletti's Roma.
Or even the United team of 2008 with Ronaldo.
So that was after Spalletti's Roma.
Yes, but more recently. On our shores, right. Ronaldo, Tevez, and Rooney, you know, switched in and out of those positions all the time. To play that formation, though, you've
Rooney's
got to have
a striker, though.
But he was playing a lot deeper in all that right. formation because Ronaldo would go centre, and so would Tevez. They would swap it around.
Well, Tevez is a striker as well.
Yeah, but he plays wide in that formation for Man City, as you well know. Mm. But the other thing I would like to say is about those three forwards, or you know, Del Bosque and Sissi plays a 4-3-3. Those forwards, at least two of them, have got to be able to break beyond the centre halves, which I think limits the amount of teams that can actually do that, because you've got to have the ultimate technique.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, don't try this at home, kids. That's the message.
Don't try this in Stoke or Norwich.
Well, there you go. 3 weeks. It's over. All we're left with is a page saying stats on it. Look at this. Hey, here's an interesting one, actually. This is from Jorge Muga, or something along those lines, who says, curiosidad, in the Spanish 11 in the final, 10 were from the Liga and 1 was from Man City. In the Italian 11, 10 were from Serie A and 1 was from Man City. Hmm. Anyway, producer Ben was wondering if anybody had any particularly memorable stats, because there have been so many, haven't there?
So many stats. It has been the tournament of the stats, hasn't it?
Yeah. Have you got any stat highlights?
I've got a couple.
Oh, go on then, Paul.
I brought out a couple because I wanted to compare them with England.
All right.
So Xavi, he was the best passer in the tournament. He made 533 passes and he completed 85% of them. Stevie G, highest placed Englander, made 251 passes, so fewer than half as many as Xavi, and his accuracy rate was only 71%.
All right.
In the fouls category, Milan Baros was the worst.
Committed
16 fouls, in 329 minutes. Andy Carroll, with 8 fouls, but only 155 minutes, would have eclipsed him had he played the same amount of minutes.
Right, okay.
You're not impressed by that?
No, I am, actually. It's really interesting.
Loving it, then.
Okay. England's Joe Hart made more saves than any other goalkeeper at Euro 2012.
Yeah, but if we're talking goalkeepers, yeah. Homage to Casillas, who got his 100th win.
Amazing.
In international football. And
he was, you know, brilliant. Because in the first half, he made some potentially decisive saves, no?
Yeah, I mean, I think being a goalkeeper in this current team, who obviously hasn't conceded a goal for 100 years or whatever it is, he's not likely to be the player who gets the most attention, but obviously he's completely
He's actually really good.
He spilled a couple today, though. That went out and didn't, on another day, would have fallen an Italian's foot or feet.
Yeah,
he also had some massive mega punches, didn't he? When he just went and the ball flew about 60 yards.
Yes.
Did you know that Joe Hart, just returning to him, he had more touches than any other England player? You probably knew this. You remember the game against Italy when Joe Hart touched the ball more than any England player? And his favourite pass was the lump ball up to Andy Carroll. It was only in the last 5 minutes, etc. Hey, other stats. Hey, Portugal, Ronaldo hit the woodwork more often than any other player in European Championships finals history. Oh, have you got something about that?
He also had the most shots on target and the most shots off target.
Oh, there you go. Amy?
I was going to say, what's the pod reaction on Fernando Torres being Golden Boot winner?
Well,
I didn't realise they had 4 subcategories of rules to decide who. Yeah. Wouldn't it just be nice to have split it?
This is because he's got the same number of goals as a bunch of other players, but he also has an assist. Is that right?
Yes. But Gomez also has an assist, so the decisive thing then became who got these goals and assists in the fewest amount of minutes.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, that makes sense. Oh, good on him, eh? I mean, I think one of the commentators pointing out, for somebody having a bad season, he's having a pretty good season. So there you go.
It's also quite a nice touch that Spain got so much flack from some people for not fielding a striker and one of their squad waltz off with the Golden Boot.
Yeah.
I think it's quite a lovely flourish.
Who were those people giving them flack, Scott? I think we should find out, hunt them down, make sure they never work in this profession again. Germany, Mario Gomez was in possession of the ball for just 28 seconds, but scored 3 goals. Yeah, that was a great stat, wasn't it? I think we might have had... Oh, and Alto Ryan, Ronaldo had the most hairdos in a single game. Yeah, thanks for that. Toon Toon, with a final stat, he says, not sure if this one has been posted, but for stats fans, the Euro 2012 goals from domestic leagues table stands as follows. Now, I tried to update this with the final. I may have made a real mess. But basically, loads from the Premier League, it's either 22 or 24, about half as many from the Bundesliga. Liga, they only got 6, or it might be 5, and Serie A got 4. That's rubbish.
Or it shows that we've got loads of foreigners playing in our league, isn't it?
Well, it does show that. You're absolutely right. Cool. All right. Well, I'm not quite ready to walk out the door with my cardboard suitcase tied up with string. So let's just spin this out a little bit further with a few little memories of this last 3 weeks. What a 3 weeks it's been. I was just thinking today, the things I'll miss. You know what made me think of it? I was reading a tweet by Football Clichés. So a shout out to them, because they've been great keeping me entertained during the games with their... quite literally football clichés. And so I missed them. I missed the whole tweetosphere and the way it kind of symbiotically linked into and enhanced and complemented, I think is the word I'm looking for, the match experience. I personally also missed that whole kind of economic subtext of the PIGS against Germany thing and the Italian reaction when they knocked the Germans out. Headlines like, bye-bye, fat ass, with a picture of Angela Merkel. And another even ruder one with somebody kicking a ball, which was her head.
2 Twitter things I noticed during the tournament. One, how many Americans were watching and interested, which I thought was unusual. And also Conor McNamara of the BBC always photo-tweeting the team sheets, which I think are a real boon for somebody who watches the match and doesn't know any of the players' names.
Right.
It has all the names and it has them in formation on the field.
Right.
An innovation I admire.
If you go to Gazzetta.it... they do that there, a little section called Tempo Reale, and you have it on your screen.
Gazzetta della Sport.
It's just gazzetta.it.
And they do it for all games everywhere all the time?
Yeah, I think pretty much all the time.
In there.
They also have live stats running alongside, which I think are made up, but all the more entertaining for that. Scott, what are you going to miss, or perhaps in your case, what are you not going to miss about this tournament?
No, well, it would be churlish to moan about how it's a very average tournament, so I won't do that. I think the one thing I will miss is the fact that everyone's been so nice to the England manager, because that's not going to last very much longer when Mr. Roy starts to slowly unravel.
Do you think that's what's going to happen?
Yep.
All right, then. Could be interesting when those qualifiers roll around. What would you not miss or miss, Amy?
I'm not going to miss some of the commentators who have been enlivening our evenings. In fact, there was a point, I think it took 4 minutes of this evening's match, where I couldn't take any more and looked at the options for alternative commentaries and found there was CBBC, which was...
which is a children's channel.
It is a children's channel.
And how did that work?
How did that work with children's television presenters sounding like they were talking text speak and making rude noises? And listening to that with the pictures of the match was a bit like some sort of cocktail of hallucinogenic drugs. So I won't be trying that one again. But I think generally what will I miss, made me feel tragically ashamed of myself on Saturday night to realise how much I missed having football on for one evening. So I'm obviously just going to miss having the tournament and having sort of constant football.
Yeah. All right, then. White Stripes, you're going to miss that, going bum, 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 bum. Of course, you can just download the record. It's not quite the same, though, is it? People counting you down to important things starting in your life, I'd like that to become more of a regular feature. No?
Yeah, what kind of important things are you thinking about?
Well, I could say, funeral. Paul, I'm going to ask you a question, then I count you down to...
We're switching off your machine in 10, 9, 8. Yeah.
That kind of thing. What else? The group stage is terrific fun. There was a little bit of that otherness about the start of this tournament that we haven't had, I think, in a tournament for a while, of like, teams and who are these players, and generally them being the unknown. I quite enjoyed that. I enjoyed the whole kind of Prandelli Renaissance and the Germans becoming nice and likable again.
I thought it was I really enjoyed Andy Carroll's headed goal, for power, and Ibrahimovic's goal. The two of them both, you know, exemplary executions of technique, but also massive amounts of power. And I thought there were kind of little cameos for individuals, which I always think help make a tournament more compelling. I think Mario's semi-final, Ronaldo's little run up until that point, and his face when he didn't get to take his penalty and looked like he was having a row with God. I enjoyed all those moments.
That was actually a real moment of the tournament, wasn't it?
I enjoyed Pirlo's penalty particularly, I must say.
Magnificent.
And then Sergio Ramos doing it again. I mean, that was quality.
Yeah. It was actually a good tournament. For a lot of the big name players did turn up. And even if some of them didn't, whole tournaments of magnificence, they at least took something to the party, which doesn't always happen, and there was quite a few of them that did that.
That's so very true.
I was just going to say, just going back to Pirlo, I think seeing him at the end weeping on the pitch, and I think he's mentioned, obviously this is something that players who've lost finals do fairly frequently, but on the back of his career for Italy, and he has mentioned, I think, that he would consider not being part of the team for the next World Cup. So that was quite a way for a special player to be finishing his career, and I felt a bit sad watching that.
Yeah. All right, then. Tell you what I'll miss, the warmth of our Polish and Ukrainian hosts, wherever we've been. Yeah. And we haven't had one bad experience in Poland and Ukraine.
And we're still here, aren't we, in Poland and Ukraine?
We're still here.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so I have to say, it's been a bit of a disappointment having to book a flight home, because I assumed I was going home in a coffin. I only bought a one-way trip.
I'm going to stay out here and farm mushrooms.
All right, that's great. So, yeah, thumbs up for the tournament, or apart from the empty seats and the silly countdowns and the industrialised celebration music and that.
Relentless chanting of Ukrainia as well in the grounds. It's like, you're not playing, mate.
Exactly. Wait your turn. So I'm not sure, because there is a little bit of it was a great tournament. I'm just thinking, actually, was it? It was well organised, but...
Well, I think considering there was a lot of scepticism about it going to those countries in the first place, it's not like that we can sit here and say that there are any horror stories or anything that was catastrophic. So I think, we should, well done for...
All right.
Whatever.
Okay.
Well done.
Yeah.
The next one's going to be in France, yeah? Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah? Just France.
Just France.
Just France, and that's in 2016.
All over France.
Yeah. That's the next
year. Or it might be 20 countries.
No, that's 2020.
I know, yeah.
Which is interesting as a concept. Why not? No? Well, we've got plenty of time to think of reasons why and why not.
Nobody's leaving until they've thought of reasons why and why not.
No. That wouldn't be fair.
Someone will need to find a use for Ibrox at some point, I would have thought.
There you go.
Well, get it up with two Sea King helicopters and just take it across Europe, just lowering it for whenever you need an international fixture.
It's a very good point, though. It's quite interesting.
Just trying to help.
All right. Well, most of all, I think I'm going to miss all the mad nights under the stars with producer Ben's sound effects, the local flora and fauna. And you guys, of course, come home with me. Let's all live together in a big Football Daily house. Anyway, until then, listener, that's it for Euro Football 20, etc. 12 Daily. We're going to be back in a similar kind of format for our regular season bi-weekly look at all the crazy world of football and the events therein. So make sure you join us for that. It's going to be, I'm thinking, mid-August, probably with a little bit of a season preview. So, hey, have a super, super summer, if it's summer where you are, or whatever season's relevant. And do make use of all the free time. And we'll catch up with you in a matter of weeks. For now, many thanks, Amy Lawrence.
Thank you.
Bye, Scott Murray.
Bye-bye, James.
And bye and thanks, Paul McKinney.
TTFN.
And above all, producer Ben. Bye, everyone. Have a super time.
Euro 2012 Football Daily. Woof.